This book, as far as I'm concerned, is similar to Haley's Roots, because it certainly indicates the roots of the Lutheran Church. And it seems to me that anybody who is a Lutheran ought to familiarize himself with what is Luther and who is Luther and how did the church get started and what is going on today. The last time we talked about the reasons for the book, the uniqueness of it. We talked about a little bit about Luther's ancestors. And today I thought I'd spend some time quickly going through the book, because I'm really at a dilemma. Some of you know a great deal about Luther and the Lutheran Church, and perhaps others do not know so much. So perhaps we can refresh your memory a little bit about Luther's life. We could talk about Luther's life for the rest of the summer in all its detail, but we only have a few more days. I'll be here another week. I hope the book arrives during that week. In case some of you wish to buy it, then I'll be happy to autograph it for you at certainly no extra charge. The book sells for $12.95 until August 31st. It is a pre-publication price. After that, it goes up to $15.
Where's your publisher for that?
It's Concordia Publishing House, St. Louis. Roland Bainton has recommended it. He thinks it's a striking performance. And Conrad Bergendorf thinks it's an excellent guide to those of you who plan to visit Lutherland, because it is authentic and it is up to date. It's also recommended by Dr. Robert Culp from the Center for Reformation Research, and I believe he is a member of the Missouri Synod. Is that right? Yes.
Where is Lutherland?
What's that?
Where is Lutherland?
Where is Lutherland? Lutherland is in the heart of Germany. Today it is present-day East Germany. It's in the former state of Thuringia. You heard of Thuringia sausage? You heard of that?
Yeah.
Well, the sausage there is very good. They also make good dumplings. And the Thuringian kitchen is can compare closely to the kitchen at home. The food is excellent. So Thuringia is a very old Germanic tribe. Most Germanic tribes, like the Franks and like the Saxons and like the some of the others, they moved, but the Thuringians stayed. There must be a reason why they stayed. The land is beautiful. It has rolling hills and meadows and streams, and the people are happy there. And this is where Luther was born, and this is where Johann Sebastian Bach was born. And so on. These people never really strayed very far like a deer from their habitat. Where was I? Oh. Please don't hesitate to ask questions, will you? Because this is not a formal lecture. By all means, speak up whenever something occurs to you. There is a map in this book, and it shows all the places, well, most of all the places mentioned in the book, including those in Lutherland. Here in the corner you can see Lutherland with all its important cities like Coburg and Schmalkalden, where the Schmalkaldic articles were written, the Wartburg in Eisenach, and Erfurt, where he went to university, and Jena and Zwickau, where the prophets came from, and Eisleben, where Luther was born, and Mansfeld, where his father worked, and Wittenberg, where he nailed on the 95 Theses, and so on.
It might help them to know that it's just kind of south of Berlin.
Yes, it is. You can see the Mark Brandenburg. It's just south of Berlin a little bit, and it's not too. As a matter of fact, a few stops on the railroad, and you're in Wittenberg. You can see the Luther House right from the train. You can see the castle church tower right from the train. It begins then with a preface by Dr. Bergendorf, but I would perhaps this morning like to read a little bit of the introduction, if you don't mind, and that gives you then the reason for the book. Many books have been published dealing with the life and work of Martin Luther. Often the text, though lengthy, ends with the death of the great reformer. This illustrated book deals not only with the life of Luther, but also with the spread of the Reformation and the schisms that threatened to split the evangelical Lutheran Church after Luther's death. Furthermore, it deals with the search for unity, culminating in the publication of the Book of Concord, and that's what Concord means, unity, in 1580. An attempt is made in this book to illustrate the years from 1480 to 1580 with a minimum of text and a maximum of pictures. It is my hope that the reader may become better acquainted with the important events, places, and people of the Reformation period. Although attempts have been made to show that the Reformation of the 16th century was a result of various economic, political, and social forces, in its very beginning, it was purely an ecclesiastical movement, rooting itself solely in the theological development of its leader, Martin Luther. As we approach the 400th anniversary of the publication of the Book of Concord, this book will hopefully illustrate that the Reformation was accomplished by more than just a few individuals during the period of complexity, faith, and human failings. For, in the final analysis, this book is a pedagogical undertaking. It is my hope that the numerous photographs, coupled with the short narrative, will bring Lutherans in all lands closer to one another when they have seen the common historical origins of their churches. And then so on. This book would not be possible. The contents, as far as the text is concerned, is divided into five chapters. The first one deals with Luther's ancestral home and early years, from 1480 to 1505. And then it goes on to Luther's monastic and university life, from 1505 to 1517, when the 95 Theses were posted. And then with the posting of the 95 Theses, we have the birth of the of Lutheranism, and then the years of storm that followed. That's from 1517 to 1525, and that, of course, was the terrible years of the Peasant War, and also the year that Luther married Catherine von Bora. We talked about that yesterday a little bit, didn't we? We weren't here yesterday. Oh.
It was the day before yesterday.
Oh, before yesterday. You're right. And then we get into these very difficult theological controversies and religious war. Now, that terrible Schmalkaldic War was a religious war, Protestant princes against the emperor and the Catholic forces, which the Protestants lost. And then finally, the search for unity, unification, and the formula of Concord, and that's what we're celebrating this year, the 400th anniversary. It was in 1577, and then finally the Book of Concord in 1580. Now the events illustrated, we begin then with 1480, and that is Myra, Luther's ancestral home. Maybe I can just read a paragraph or two there. Would you like that or not? I'd rather you have this from the horse's mouth. And the horse's mouth is Dr. Ingertraud Ludolfi, who wrote the text for this, and as I told you yesterday, an international theologian, and there is no fantasy in here, and no legends, and if it is a legend, it is indicated. There's not one word in here about Luther throwing the ink bottle against the devil. But when you go to the Castle of Artburg and see his room, there you see on the wall where the tourists have chipped away pieces of plaster on which there's supposed to be ink, you see. And then what they did, after they got the whole wall torn down, then they replastered, and then the people put some more ink on it, you see. And then they chipped away again. But now they have a rope across the door and said, kindly do not chip, let's not be monks. No, that's not it.
Oh. How is the man's name spelled who wrote the text for you?
What's that?
How is the man's name?
It's a woman. And my age, by the way. Dr. Ingertraud Ludolfi, who has provided the text from Luther, is a university lecturer in Leipzig, East Germany. She's a theologian, author, a highly respected critic, and one of the most prominent Luther researchers living in the German Democratic Republic. Dr. Ludolf is the author of several books, including an anniversary facsimile edition of the September Testament of Martin Luther. The reason they call it September Testament is because it was published in September, 1521. That's the New Testament. She has contributed extensively to the Encyclopedia of the Lutheran Church. Over 300 articles of hers are in there. And has reviewed the works of such scholars as Franz Lau, Bernard Lohse, and Roland Bainton. At the present, she's also working on a definitive biography of Frederick the Wise. About 2 or 3 weeks ago, I was in East Germany, and Augustana College awarded her the honorary degree, Doctor of Humane Letters. The East German government felt it, there was no political or church political reason for her to leave her country to accept a degree at Augustana College, even though she was invited by the Lutheran World Federation to come to this country. There was no reason for her to leave her country, and therefore I went over there and presented it to her at the St. Nicholas Church in Leipzig. There's an anteroom there which is used for these kinds of occasions, and it was a very festive occasion. And I went over there with all my paraphernalia and regalia, my robe and things that the East Germans have never seen before. They don't wear robes over there, the professors and doctors and so on. That is something of the past. They have eliminated that. But she was proud to receive this honorary degree, and when I presented her with the hood, I thought she was going to wear it day in and day out. She was so proud of it. Okay? And it was done in the context of the church. Her former students, because after all, she examined students who became theologians, who received their doctor's degree and so on. She tested them. And those were there, and there was the superintendent, I don't know what you call it in English, chief pastor, I guess, of the church, and of the Church of Saxony was there, and others. Mostly close friends, members of the church and her students were there. So it was very nice. Matter of fact, she said, in a way, it's kind of nice that I received a degree over here. That in that way, her friends could show up. If she would have received it at Augustana College, then her friends could not have come along, as you know. All right, Myra, 1480. Myra, Luther's ancestral home. Would you like to hear a little bit? I'm glad you said so. Martin Luther's parents came from Myra, which is, you've heard of Eisenach, where the Wartburg is? You go 20 or 30 kilometers south, and there is a little farm community of Myra. It actually came from the name Moor, which is a marsh, marshy kind of ground, which then they used to get turf from there. And it's also has a lot of minerals and so on. It's not very good for farming, but it's good for mining. And yet the people had to farm in order to earn a living and get something to eat. They came a village located at the edge of the Thuringian Forest, it's only 9 miles south of the Wartburg Castle. The castle, which was later to attain great importance for Luther and thereby significance for the Reformation. The farming community of Myra at that time belonged to the Elector Ernst of Saxony, the father of Frederick the Wise. Now, Frederick the Wise was, of course, the prince who protected Luther, and therefore he did not was not turned over to the Curia or to Rome, and he would have been burned like all the reformers before him, namely John Huss, Jerome of Prague, and some of the others. Gernardo Bruno, for example. Elector Ernest only rarely interfered with the affairs of the self-governing administration of the village. The peasants were relatively independent. Heine Luder, the head of the family and grandfather of Martin Luther, was certainly in the village of Myra around 1480. Since the father, Hans Luder, was the oldest son, notice the word Luder and not Luther, he changed the name Luder later when he went to Wittenberg to teach at the university there. He was the oldest son, and he could not inherit the family estate, and therefore he became a miner, at the latest by the time of Martin's birth. The copper mines of the county of Mansfeld in nearby Saxony attracted many an ambitious young man at that time. At first, Martin Luther's parents found a place to live in Eisleben, that is now in Saxony, which is near, not too far from Leipzig, also below Berlin. The economic opportunities in Eisleben were apparently not great enough, so the family moved to Mansfeld in the early summer of 1484. which means that Luther only lived in Eisleben, the town in which he also died, by the way, 6 months. And in the beginning, the father was presumably a simple miner. But already before 1491, he joined one of the many small unions of the community of miners, which facilitated the organization of work. And at the same time, he leased, together with a person from Mansfeld, a small smelting works, so that he could keep himself and his growing family on a financially sound basis. Hans Luther had to work hard, and although his standard of living improved somewhat, he never became rich or affluent. Now, the East German government, the idea of the East Germans is they try to make Luther now into a capitalist because he ran the small smelting works, you see. And that's the reason that was put in there. He never became rich or affluent. Now, this text was very carefully chosen because it is my hope and my greatest wish that this book will be published in East Germany. I'm going over there during Christmas vacation. I have a couple of weeks. I was just at the office in East Berlin at the Secretary of State there for culture, and I showed them the book, and they were simply like the crushed firefly, delighted with it. And they said, "Have you got a German publisher yet?" And I said, "No." They said, "We would like to publish it in East Germany." Now, if that is the case, that means that in all these other communist countries, it can be published. It'll appear on the bookshelves in Czechoslovakia, in Hungary, in Poland, and so on. I would like, there are a lot of Lutherans in Poland, I would like all Lutherans to read this, not just those in the West, all of them.
I thought it was interesting that the statement that because he was the eldest son, he could not inherit.
That's right.
Because now my father came from Norway, and there the eldest son got everything.
Well, this changes from community to community, from province to province. For example, in the Rhineland, it is the youngest that inherits. No, it's the oldest that inherits. It keeps changing, you see, wherever you go. Some figure, well, if you're the oldest, you're the first one there, you have the right to everything. Others figure, well, the oldest, he's big enough now, he can go on his own, let the youngest one. He doesn't have a chance at all, let him inherit it. So you see, you got different ideas on that. That didn't make any difference in my case, because there was nothing to inherit. Work and worry are etched deeply in the faces of Luther's parents. I talked about that the last time, as portrayed by Cranach the Elder. Martin Luther is considered to resemble his mother. The sensibleness that characterizes the picture of Luther as a monk can also be seen in a painting of Luther's mother. In the face of the father, we can see the vigor he employed to better himself economically and socially, and with which he also resisted his son when the latter sacrificed honor and wealth to enter a monastery. His father had planned a career as a lawyer for his son, and a marriage which would have been favorable for Luther's family. And Luther was indebted to both of his parents for the strict upbringing, which was custom of those days. Because he took a nut one day, little Martin was beaten so badly by his mother that the blood flowed. Luther's father was just as strict. The piety in the home reflected the times wherein erroneous ideas and superstitions were mingled with Christian belief. A special patron saint of the miners was Saint Anna, who was said to be the mother of the Virgin Mary. Now, this idea of superstition and Aberglauben and so on is still prevalent in the German society. They still don't walk under ladders, and they still think it's bad luck when a black cat crosses their path. And sometimes when a person dies at home, they put sand on the window and watch for footsteps. And these kinds of things. So it's, as a matter of fact, there is a regionalistic writer around the 20s, he just died about 10 years ago. He wrote about the superstition that if you eat before Mass, you see, you're going to die. And even I, as a child, if you eat cherries and drink a glass of water afterwards, you're going to die. I mean, these are the kinds of things. You see, I ate some cherries and I drank water and I didn't die. So It's these kinds of things that are still prevalent, and it's the same with drinking ice water. They just won't drink ice water. They think it's very bad for you. They figure they're going to freeze your kidneys, and you're going to die of a terrible, terrible stomach pains. All right, in 1483, then he went to Eisleben, and he was born on November the 10th, 1483. And the reason he's called Martin is because he was baptized on St. Martin's Day. And that's the reason they call him Martin Luther, after St. Martin. He was the second son of the family. He received the name Martin, yeah, that's, I just said that, the Feast of St. Martin. Luther had several brothers and sisters, but unfortunately, we know little about them. All right, after 6 months, he moved to Mansfeld, and that's where he spent his earliest childhood. It's not too far from Eisleben, where he was probably attending the city school by March 1488. There he learned reading, writing, singing, and Latin under strict discipline. Singing was taught so that the pupils could participate in the services of the church. Latin was at that time the language of the administrators and educated people. One had to master this language in order to have an opportunity for an advanced career. This medieval, everyday Latin was considered coarse and rude by the humanists. To be sure, Luther never wrote the elegant Latin of the humanists, in which his friend and co-worker Melanchthon was an expert. But Luther's Latin had a clear and fluent quality. Now, of course, you know about the humanists. This was the time of the Renaissance. This was a time of going back to the old values of the Greeks and the Romans. And, of course, the idea of the Greeks was to be human, humane, you see. Das Gute, das Wahre, und das Schöne, huh? Goodness, truth, and beauty. These kinds of things. And consequently, they went back to these old writings in Greek, and so they translated them into English. They did really scientific work, and this was the work of Reuchlin, this was the work of Melanchthon, this was the work of all these humanists who went back to the days of the Greeks and the Romans and worked with these kinds of things, books, and translated them and tried to reestablish these values of the humanists. Is this boring or what?
Very good.
Huh?
Very good.
You have to let me know.
No, just keep the asides and the footnotes coming. Altogether, it's really good.
Oh, I see. Keep the footnotes coming, yeah?
Yeah.
You like the footnotes?
Oh,
yeah.
I love footnotes. Never skip one, not even yours.
Oh, I see.
I have a question on one of the statements you read. It seems a common liturgical practice in the medieval, late medieval church was that no one really participated in the Mass. Rather, it was viewed by the people. Why then was Luther taught to sing, as it says there?
Because they had accolades and choir boys and these kinds of things. What's that?
He's a choir boy.
Of course. Of course. That's how he acquired his love for singing. That's how he acquired his love for music. And that's why he was so apt at writing all these hymns, these Luther hymns that we sing today. Ein fester Burg ist unser Gott, you know. And aus tiefer Not, and so on. Music played a very important life in Luther's life. It's through music that he got this nice home in Eisenach. It's through music that he got something to eat. One time he went up to a farmer and he was going to serenade him, and the farmer came out with a bratwurst about that long. Luther thought it was a stick, and he took off like a bird. He thought the farmer's going to hit him. Here comes a stranger. You see, when you live there on a farm by yourself and you see a stranger walking up, the first thing you do is you grab something to defend yourself. Who knows who that is, particularly when a group of boys come. Little did the farmer realize that they were going to serenade him. And forget it. Does that make sense or not? That's exactly what happened.
Did he go back and get it?
Well, of course he got it.
Okay.
Otherwise, we wouldn't have a Luther. He'd starve to death. We'd have something to eat. Where was I? In Mansfeld. In Latin. All right. While attending school in Mansfeld, Luther certainly became familiar with the three usual texts taught in class. The Pseudo Cato, Aesop, and Terence. Now, these are what? These are Roman types of writing. The humor expressed in these works transmitted wisdom for life in addition to the teaching of the traditional grammar. Now, Luther hated school, like most Germans hate school. Thomas Mann hated school. And Kafka, they all hated school. So what are you going to do? The Dukes of Mansfeld, who had their castle on the hill overlooking the city, would later play a role during the last days of Luther. In order to settle a disagreement of purely secular nature between the Dukes, Luther traveled to Eisleben in December 1545 and once again at the end of January 1546. After he succeeded in settling the argument, Luther died in the city of his birth on February the 18th, 1546. From Mansfeld, then, his father wanted his boy to get a real fine education. He already got a good one here in the school in Mansfeld with Latin, grammar, these kinds of things. And now he wanted to send him to the best school that he could think of, and that was in Magdeburg. And this school in Magdeburg was located right next to the cathedral, and you can still see the buildings today. They were started in the 11th century. You can still see the beautiful Romanesque arch and so on. I got a picture of it in here. And this school was run by the Brothers of the Common Life, a sort of a sect, a very pious religious group that concentrated on reading the Bible. Luther attended school 1 year in Magdeburg on the Elbe River, beginning in the spring of 1497. The school was run by the Brothers of the Common Life, an order founded in the Netherlands. In these famous schools, the brothers emphasized reading the Holy Scriptures, heartfelt piety, and a return to the simple life. They were very strict. One time, Luther was sick, and he had a high fever. And you know, these brothers of the Common Life wouldn't give him any water. He had such a high fever. He was dying for a thirst. I remember when I was a kid, too. I'm going on a hike like this, and I was dying of thirst. Do you think they'd give me a drink of water? I think they were preparing me for the Africa Corps or something. They wouldn't give me a drink of water. No, sir. You don't get water when you want it. See how lucky you are? Just dip right here into Railwood Creek, get all the water you want to drink. Not there. That's another country. Where was I? Oh, Martin Luther wouldn't give him a drink of water, so he crawled out of bed on his hands and knees and got a jug of water and drank it. Otherwise, he would have died.
Now,
in these famous schools, what?
Why didn't they give him water? Because medically they thought water
was not good? A lot of it is discipline. It's discipline your mind and your body. A lot of it. And
just because you wanted it, they wouldn't give it to you, huh?
No, I don't think that's it. I think it has to do with strict discipline in all of its aspects. And that's what German is all about.
Stupid.
Darn right. Discipline. The brother... I said that once. Here in Magdeburg, as later in Eisenach, Luther supported himself by being a member of a small school chorus, which went from house to house singing songs. I just talked about the Bratwurst episode, didn't I? Mm-hmm. At that time, his manner of earning a living was considered neither degrading nor a sign of poverty. Luther later in life described a moving experience in meeting a Franciscan monk. This is in Magdeburg. The former Prince Wilhelm of Anhalt. He had, and this is the quote, the actual quote. This is taken out of Luther's table talk. He had this prince who was a worldly figure who could have 7-day Sundays and live the life of Riley. He would be considered today a member of the jet set. He had so fasted, neglected, and mortified his body that he looked like a dead man. He now belonged to these brothers of the Common Life. Whoever looked at him was deeply moved and had to feel ashamed of his own secular position in life. Even after 35 years, in 1533, Luther gave this vivid account of the incident in Magdeburg. Here you see a prince as a monk, skin and bones, soon thereafter he died. So from Magdeburg, he went to Eisenach. And Eisenach is now close to the border of the East and West Germany. You come to Gerstungen, and that's where you check your passport and your suitcases and these kinds of things. Then the next stop is Eisenach. And in Eisenach, of course, is where the Castle Wartburg is. In 1489, Luther was sent by his parents to Eisenach. This became his beloved city, meine liebe Stadt, for which he always had a tender spot in his heart. He attended the Pfarrschule. A Pfarrer is a minister. It's a church school. The parish school of St. George, where he developed an admiration for his teachers. He soon found a place to eat with a pious, distinguished, well-to-do lady who enjoyed his singing and devout praying in church. Now there's this church, St. George, and that's then where Luther sang. This lady was probably the wife of a prosperous businessman, Heinrich Schalbe. But whether Luther lived here or with the Katas, who were related to the Schalbes, or at another place in Eisenach, is not known for certain. Now the house, the Luther house in Eisenach, is the so-called Kutta house, the family Kata. Now the Katas, they originally came from Italy, and they were well-to-do business people, and they were quite rich. The house they show you today as Luther house is the Kata house. But it is not absolutely certain that's the house in which Luther lived. Like a lot of the monuments were not absolutely certain. So these things have to be put in there because this book must be correct.
All myths are sort of right, though.
What's that?
Almost all myths are sort of right. You know, like the Dutch boy.
Yeah.
There's always some truth behind it.
Yeah, some truth behind it.
There is some truth behind it. But you go to Eisenach and you see the Luther house, and then you think immediately, ah, this is where he lived. There's the room. There's the desk. There's the window. That building was completely destroyed during World War II. And it was rebuilt again in exact in the shape, like many of the Goethe house in Frankfurt, for example. Mm-hmm. Same thing. You think that's where Goethe lived, and that's where the stove is, and that's where the kitchen is, where the bedroom is. It was completely destroyed, right down to the ground. And it was rebuilt exactly the way it was in the 18th century. Because they had the plans, they had samples of the paper, and they imitated the whole thing all over again.
I don't think one tourist in 1,000 knows that the Campanile in Venice was rebuilt after it fell down in 1907. Yeah. St. Mark's Plaza?
Yeah.
They did it so shrewdly and so quickly.
That's what I mean.
Even the pigeons.
Yeah. Same pigeons of 1420.
Nevertheless, through these families, Luther came into a circle of people in which religion was the most important part of their lives. And then from Eisenach, his father earned enough money to send his son to the University of Erfurt. Now, Erfurt was the city in those days. It had the universities. It was the seat of all the humanists, like Crotus Rubinus and some of the others. At the end of April 1501, Luther began his studies at the University of Erfurt. He described, as prescribed, he enrolled first in the College of Liberal Arts, where the seven courses of the Artes Liberales were taught. I always concentrate that on that. When I teach at Augustana, because that is a college of liberal arts, and it seems to me before a student graduates from that school, he ought to know what liberal arts means, mm-hmm. at least in the old days. And that's what you're going to find out right now, what it means in the old days. Isn't that exciting? You could care less, huh? All right. These courses had little to do with what we understand as the term arts today. They include the trivium, which were the courses in grammar, dialectic, and rhetoric, as well as quadrivium, which included courses in geometry, mathematics, music, and astronomy. At the end of the Middle Ages, the studies of the trivium gave the student a solid foundation in the Latin language. And the students in the quadrivium were the beginning of our modern science. But at the time of Luther, only natural philosophy, quote-unquote, was taught. It included a few facts of scientific nature. As a matter of fact, Luther, when at one of his table talks, he talked about the new Copernican theory about the Earth, you know, moving around the sun. Luther's comment was, read Gideon in the Bible, tell you all about it. I'll tell you all about it, which was not in agreement, of course, with Copernican theory as we know it today. We know two of Luther's teachers from the time in Erfurt, Bartholomus Arnaldi, called Usingen, from Usingen in Nassau. Now, this Nassau is not the Nassau that you're thinking about. This is a Nassau near Wiesbaden, That was a small principality. Who knows where Wiesbaden is?
Like,
huh? Near Frankfurt. Who knows where Frankfurt is? Didn't we have one last night? Wasn't that a Frankfurter?
No, that was a Knockwurst.
Oh, that was a Knockwurst. I remember a few years ago. I remember a few years ago, Kennedy went to Berlin and he said, "Ich bin ein Berliner." Aren't you glad you didn't go to Frankfurt? Where's that got to? Out of Hamburg? Ich bin ein Hamburger. I'm awfully glad I didn't go to Limburg. Been on Limburger. Both were, no. And Jodocus Tutwetter from Eisenach. Both were theologians representing the dominant philosophy of the school, that of William Ockham. Now you got to know that name if you want to understand Luther's problems in the monastery and later in life. You got to remember good old Bill here. William Ockham. Yes, Pauline.
That's Occam's razor?
Occam's razor.
Is that the same one?
Yeah, that's the same one.
Did you always take the simplest explanation?
Yeah.
Well, maybe not.
No idea.
She's talking about Occam's philosophy.
Yeah. That's what this is. This is Occam's philosophy. That's right. In other words, if you want to get to heaven, you better do some good works. The man has a choice of either doing good works or not doing good works. And since he has this choice, he can therefore receive salvation if he does good works.
Now, she said that the sum and substance of Occam's philosophy is what? Occam's razor?
Well, that's how we call it. Maybe just a device to remember it.
I'm not familiar with Occam. I'm familiar with Schick. That's what I use.
You always take the simplest. If you have an explanation that's complicated and one that's simple,
yeah.
You always take the simpler one.
Yeah. Well, I think if you remember good works, you'll be all set. After students successfully completed 3 years in the College of Liberal Arts, he was permitted to attend one of the graduate schools in theology, law, or medicine. As a graduate student, he could teach in the College of Liberal Arts. And now Luther lived in the so-called Georgenburse. Now, a Burse is a place where students live. And this is in the suburb, part of the city is called Georg, okay? Like probably the church was St. George or something like that. That's where he lived. A Burse was a house for the student with strict regulations. The entire day of the student, as well as the studies, were carefully supervised by a faculty member with the rank of master. It was mandatory that the student attend classes each day, offer daily prayers, and attend religious services. There were hours set aside each day for review under the direction of the faculty members supervising the Burse. Besides, a professor from the university would send a topic for debate each week. Now, this became very important because when you come up with a new idea, you're going to have to defend it. And the way to defend it is in a debate. And if you don't know how to debate, like Amsdorf and some of the others, you're not going to make it. And this was a saving grace for Luther. He memorized practically the entire Bible. He could quote it just like that. Where did he learn it? Right here. And now when you say to our students, "I think it'd be a good idea if you memorize it," why, that's a dirty word. How dare you ask me to memorize something? Or perhaps they're not going to start a new church. Maybe that's the idea. I don't know. Numerous such topics which Luther had later compiled for his students have been preserved to this day. In debating the topic, the student was required to answer his opponent as quickly, skillfully, and irrefutably as possible. Material for the debate had to be prepared in advance, including quotations from literature. The exercise was used to train the student's memory, his logic, and his ability to respond effectively and skillfully. It was a method of formal education that the student had to defend a topic which did not originate with him and with which he might not agree. How excellently Luther had made use of this kind of formal education shows later in a debate in Leipzig, where it was reported, Luther is extremely well educated. Above all, he possesses an outstanding knowledge of the Bible, as if he had memorized almost all of it. He is never at a loss for words because he has such a tremendous vocabulary. At Erfurt, Luther was unconsciously immersed in the spirit of Occamism. But it was not until later that he recognized his agreement with the philosophy, which considered reason incapable of explaining the mysteries of belief. Arcanism belonged to the philosophical school of nominalism, which considered only the individual thing, that is, a particular experience, as real, not the general term, that is, the idea. Therefore, access to another world was for the nominalist only possible through revelation. Subsequently, Luther rejected the nominalist emphasis on man's free will, as well as the inherent goodness in man. He also did not like the nominalist devotion to the old heathen, quote-unquote, Aristotle, in spite of the fact that Luther was indebted to him for much scientific knowledge. Although Luther, inspired by Usingen and Tretfeder, became acquainted with the works of other classical authors such as Ovid, Virgil, and Plautus, he displayed no real connection with humanism until a much later time. So that's the text. And now we're going to have a series of pictures. There's Luther's home in Myra. There's a statue. Most of these statues were erected in the 19th century during the so-called Romantic period of Germany. And at the base of it here, they have scenes which are prevalent in that particular era. Luther's father and mother, by Lukas Cranach.
He is really great.
What?
He is great. Gives you a sense of character.
Just look at those faces. Just look at the strength in these people. They had to in order to earn a living those days. The village of Myra. And if you look closely, there you see a horse with six legs. And this is Eisleben. This is the tower. This is the church in which Luther, St. Peter and Paul, this is the church in which Luther was baptized.
Germany
priest was there. No. No, this way was baptized.
It was in Eisleben, but not that church.
It was in that city.
It was in that city.
There you can see the mining scheme of the 16th century done by George Agricola. He wrote a very famous book about mining. And I found this at the University of Leipzig, and it shows the old miners going down a shaft with little oil lamps and these kinds of things. I think it's very interesting for those who are interested in geology. I know our dean, Sandelius, at Augustana College, he teaches geology, and he thought that was really great.
But these were copper mines.
These are copper mines, yeah.
Just like the mine out
yeah,
here.
It's yeah.
Not appropriate,
wasn't it? Yeah, I often thought of that.
Here's Luther's house in where he was born, in Eisleben. And this house has seen many changes. It was an orphanage once, and it was a hospital once, and it burned down a couple of times, and rebuilt again. But today, it's a museum. Cost you a few marks to get in, but it's worth it. Another way to mine from the Book of Agricola. And this then is Mansfeld. This is taken from the castle of the Count, whom Luther visited later to settle an argument.
What language was Agricola's book written in?
Latin. Also German.
Herbert Hoover.
Yeah, he's the one that translated into English.
He
yes.
Translated that
yeah,
book.
It was written in Latin and English.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Latin and German.
Yes, President Hoover was quite learned, and he knew Latin well enough to translate that text on mining.
Here's Luther's father's house in Mansfeld. That's the houses he built, and then his brother Jacob. Took it over then. This is the castle, just one little tower of it, erected in the 16th century. Here is the patron saint, Anne. That becomes important later on.
Do you happen to know why the miners selected her as their guide?
No, I have no idea. I don't know why the firemen select Florian Geyer and all these guys. I have
yes.
No idea.
Okay.
It happens to be a big shot. It's the mother of the Virgin Mary. And that's the reason they call it the Anna Selbst Dritt. In other words, there are three of them, three important figures here. The mother of the Virgin Mary and then Christ. Three in one here.
Maybe Anna was as close as they could get to the Virgin Mary without infringing upon her.
Remember when he came in a lightning storm there and he said, Heilige Anna, ich will Mönch werden. I want to become a monk. Huh? Holy Anne, or St. Anne. Magdeburg, and right next to the cathedral is the school of the Brothers of the Common Life. And in front of it is the River Elbe. And there is part of that old cathedral school. Now, these cathedrals are all maintained now by the government because the people, the community, can't take care of it, the parishioners. There is a sketch, a little drawing from the register of the University of Erfurt, and it shows the occupation with death. When you work in the mines, you're always, you know, death will come. Hmm? They weren't so worried about death as they were what comes after death. Preoccupation with death. It's called Death with Scion Hourglass. Here's St. Nicholas Church and the walls in the city of Eisenach. And undoubtedly Luther walked through this gate, city gate, in 1501. And here's the Luther house, the Carter house. I just talked about that before, which then was rebuilt. And this is the church school in Eisenach. And it's still in the old Gothic style. And then from there he goes to Erfurt. Erfurt is a very important city of 20,000, even in those days, with 20 or 30 churches and monasteries and a huge university and a famous university, and that's where he went to school then. Here's the register where Luther registered. They put his name down, and it's not Martin Luther, it's Martin Luther X Mansfeld. In other words, Martin Luther X from Mansfeld. That's where his house is. That's where his father is. Just like you would say here, George Herman from Pruneville, Iowa. I mean, that's what they put in the register. Graduate of, you know. This is the university before it was destroyed in World War II. It has never been rebuilt. The University of Erfurt. Here is the plaque of the humanist. I said the University of Erfurt was the seat of the humanist. And there are such humanists as Karlstadt and Melanchthon and John Lang and many others. This is a view of the Georgenbörse. Behind this building is then the place where Luther lived as a student. Here's one of his teachers, Jodocus Trutvetter, and this is the scene of Erfurt, and I got the swans there because Luther is often pictured with a swan. And the reason for that is because when he became a monk, we'll talk about that later, he threw himself in front of the altar. There's the grave marker of Jan Zacharias. Jan Zacharias is the one who was instrumental in convicting John Hus to death. And that was 100 years before Luther, 1415, something like that. And he was burned for trying to reform the church. And Hus means goose. Husenite is a little town in Czechoslovakia, and that's where Jan Hus came from. So, and then I think the story is that before his death, Hus said, a swan will rise, so Luther is all, and will carry on my work after my death. So therefore, I thought I'd ask those swans to go there and pose for me so I can show the people here at Holden the connection between this picture. Okay, let's have it. This is a bridge.
Yeah.
This is called the Kramerbrücke in Erfurt. Very, very old. These buildings, that's a bridge. It has buildings on both sides. You can't see the bridge. Buildings on both sides. And the water flows underneath. They used to call Erfurt the Venice of the North because it has all these rivers and canals going through it. It's good for two reasons. Number one, it gets rid of the garbage and what have you. It also cleanses the city. You go to Munich today, what do you have right in the heart of the city? A park. What flows through the park? The entire length of the city, the river Isar. It cleans the city. It gives the people a chance to get out of their cement and concrete and look at the park and smell a little fresh air.
Coleridge traveled in Germany and knew the German language, and Coleridge says, the Rhine washes Germany, but alas, what washes the Rhine?
Mm. Alas, what washes the Rhine? Wine, I guess. Rhine wine?
Ich
wünsche mir selbst. Sehr gut. Here's a writing from Professor Usingen. The idea is not only to know Luther, but also his professors, his colleagues, his students, and his friends. Huh? That's the idea. That's the reason I put these things in there. Are we out of time? Or you want to hear a little bit more?
Go to the buildings.
No,
do you have any idea what the enrollment of a university like Erfurt or Wittenberg might have been? Have you ever run across?
No, I never did. Never did find out. No, but it was one of the biggest. One of the biggies. It was established in the 14th century, I believe, or shortly thereafter. All right, the next chapter would be 1505, Lightning Strikes at Stottenheim. Luther had hardly completed his examination for the master's degree in the beginning of February 1505 and begun to study law in May according to the wishes of his father when he went home to his parents in Mansfeld about the 20th of June. We don't know why he left home in the middle of the semester. Upon his return to the university, he was caught in a thunderstorm on July 2nd near Stottenheim, which is a little farm community outside of Erfurt. A bolt of lightning struck so close to him that he was thrown to the ground. Seized with fear, Luther called to his patron saint for, in such a situation, "Help me, Saint Anne, I will become a monk." This event was the catalyst for Luther's entry into the monastery. We don't know the cause that drove him into monastic life, for to be sure, it emphasized God's absolute power, majesty, and freedom, but it gives man the freedom of will and the possibility to make himself acceptable and favorable in the eyes of God by doing good works.
What year was that, Kerwin?
1505. And this was in June. So in July, he 17th, as a matter of fact, with the gate of the monastery of the Augustinian Order of Hermits closed behind Luther. He had intention...
What? Did you say June 2nd or July 2nd?
Like, he went into the monastery on July 17th, 1505.
No, the thunderstorm was July 2nd. That's 472 years ago today.
Yeah. He had intentionally chosen this branch of the Augustinian order since it was the strictest among the six monasteries in Erfurt. Last time we talked about the monastic life, how terrible it was, how filthy it was, how it really wasn't a monastic life at all, because they had women and all kinds of people running around in these monasteries and all kinds of monks running around in places where there should only be nuns, you see. So it was a real shamble, a real mess, except this monastery here, this Augustinian monastery, the hermits. This was strict. They went according to the rules established in Italy, and that's all it was. And that's the reason Luther chose that.
Augustinian?
Augustinian, Order of Hermits in Erfurt. Well, let's close there, and then the next time we'll perhaps continue on a little bit, if you like this sort of thing. I prefer it, really, because we're sticking to the facts this way. Okay?
Yes. You know what fun those monks had?
What?
You know what fun those monks had in those days?
No.
None.
Oh, I see. Did you hear about the in one of the monasteries, they had a fish, they're going to, serve it. And the one says, "Are you the... fish fry?" He says, "No, I'm the chipmunk." Auf Wiedersehen.